Welcome to Small City, Big Stories, the podcast celebrating the people and projects driving downtown North Adams forward.
Hey everyone, welcome to Small City, Big Stories, brought to you by the North Adams Partnership. I'm your host, Jenny Wright, Executive Director of the North Adams Partnership. Each episode, we celebrate the people and projects driving downtown North Adams forward. Today, we are joined by Vanessa Till Hooper, who blends art, architecture, and technology to make public spaces into experiences, giving communities agency, voice, and a little joy along the way. I'm so happy you're here on this balmy 20-degree North Adams morning.
I'm so happy to be here, Jenny.
I walked out of my house this morning, and I was like, it's t-shirt weather
right?
Today.
Absolutely. I looked at the temperature, and it was 17 or something. I was like, hallelujah.
Double digits, right? I don't know if you have heard this story or if we've talked about this, but the origin story of us knowing each other was that I was working at a museum here in North Adams, a little place called Mass Mocha. Blink and you'll miss it. And a curator there said, hey, I just met this incredible woman from Los Angeles. She just moved to North Adams. She has the word strategy in her job title. You have the word strategy in your job title. You should have coffee. So we did. We sat down and had coffee. And as soon as I sat down, she said, the craziest thing just happened to me this morning. I just found out that my childhood friend from Los Angeles just moved to North Adams. We haven't been in touch in decades. I had no idea until right now. Isn't that wild? And I said, you know, it's like more common than you might think here in North Adams. And one, I'm so happy that you're here in North Adams. And two, I would love to learn about what brought you here all the way from sunny La La Land.
It was a, you know, multi-step journey, but we are just so glad we found North Adams. It feels so right for us to be here. And it was really amazing when Aria reached out and was like, your brother just told me you live in North Adams. Like, I just arrived.
Surprise.
Like, what? How can that be?
And this was 2022? What
might
remind
have been.
Me?
Yeah, we moved here in early 21. Or we bought the house in early 21.
Okay.
Moved in the fall or late summer.
So how did you find North Adams? What was your journey? What's your background?
Yeah,
back in LA?
So, well, I gotta go back all the way to LA. All right.
Yeah. Let's start at the beginning.
Okay. So I grew up in Los Angeles, you know, knew Aria in Waldorf School when we were kids.
Oh, gosh.
And then I moved to San Francisco for college, went to art school, went back to LA for grad school in architecture. And got a job right out of the gate at a company called Oblong. And they were doing gestural interface computing out of MIT Boston.
Wow.
And it was an opportunity to design a conference room space for, like, gestural systems. So essentially, like, how can we use, like, the problem being, like, how can we use computers in less of a siloed way? How can we make them, like, room scaled so that you and I can be, like, supported by a technology atmosphere but still be in our, like, human dynamic as the primary, you know, way of communicating and having it, like, supported by the whole room being, like, fully tacked out. And so it was a great challenge to build a space and, like, really learn about, you know, 20-inch cable chases, things like that that I just never thought about during architecture school. And a friend of ours came to LA and he was doing a lot of creative tech, but really more like installation specific creative tech in Boston. And I had actually just gone out to Boston to open another office for this company where I was working for Oblong Industries. And he said, come to Boston, come work for me. And Benji and I looked at each other and were like, we really needed a change. We thought we were going to move to the West Side and, like, surf more. But, like, let's go to freezing Boston instead. And we did. And we drove our two little girls across the country. And it was the winter of, like, or the fall of 2014, which was, like, ended up being a really super cold, crazy winter.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, what have we done? Like, there was, like, 3 feet of snow, and our kids, like, you know, they jumped into a snow pile. You couldn't see them, and we're like, what have we done? And by the end of that winter, we just looked at each other and went, like, we love this so much. Like, seasons are so fun.
Aren't seasons the best?
The best.
I could not imagine living in a place that was warm on Christmas, for example.
Yeah.
I hear you.
And my husband has, like, a brain condition, and he also learned that the cold weather is really good for that.
Oh, wow.
And it's, like, really, like, just much, like, incredibly reduced in the cold weather. So,
like,
his symptoms. So that also was, like, a really great reason to kind of, you know, be in the changing seasons of Boston. And we're also sort of halfway between his family and my family. My family being in L.A., his family being in France and Budapest and Hungary. And so it felt like a great middle spot. And then we were, you know, our kids got older in Boston. We lived in Cambridge, actually, for many years. And started coming out to North Adams, going to Massmoka, staying at tourists and porches. And, you know, there's, like, a great dog wing of porches was, like, perfect. And the kids would go swimming in the pool. And pandemic hit. And we just, like, kept coming out here. This was our spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at you know, real estate in the area as I'm, like, sitting in, like, the hotel, and I was like, what the heck? Like, we had sort of given up on the prospect of ever owning a home. Both of us are in creative fields, and we're, like, in Boston, it will just never happen. Like, that's just not for us. But we both love renovation, and we love, like, interior design, and I'm an architect and or an architectural background, and, you know, we both would love to do that. And so we looked at, you know, homes in this area, and we're like, wait a second, we could actually afford to buy a home here, and we love it here, and we come here every time we get a chance to. So let's buy a weekend place. That's the kind of home that we can own, is a weekend place. So we ended up buying a gas station. And
it's a weekend place.
Right? And we're like, we'll put a yurt in the yard. It'll be great, right? Because we just didn't think we would be moving here. And our daughter was, you know, transitioning into middle school, and the middle school coming out of the pandemic, I think we still were kind of in the pandemic at the time.
Mm-hmm.
They just were on screens all the time. And, you know, they even had their screens, like, they were allowed to have phones with them all the time, and at recess allowed to be on their phones. And out of, you know, we went to this orientation, and we left the orientation, and Benji and I both went, like, no way. There's just no way that's okay for our kid. We have to get her outside. She has to be outside. And we just started brainstorming, like, what could we possibly do? And we were like, if we moved into our unrenovated, literally raining inside gas station, she could be outside. Mm-hmm. And she could go to a school that has outdoor learning and, you know, just a more supportive environment than that. And so we did it. We moved into the gas station prior to renovating it. And put our kids at Pine Cobble in Williamstown, and, you know, have, like, unfolded the story from there.
I love that. And while moving to a gas station sort of sight unseen is not necessarily something that just anyone does, the theme, the common thread of discovering North Adams in a really strange sort of bouncing around kind of way during the pandemic is almost eerily common. I've had multiple conversations with people who moved here in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
In fact, the last conversation I had on the podcast was with Andrew Fitch, who moved here. His intention was to stay in Airbnbs across the state.
Yeah.
His second stop was North Adams. Mm. He never left.
There you go.
So it's like different ways of getting here that still seem sort of common.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, over the course of living here now 4 years, we feel just like, I don't think we'll ever leave.
I love that for you.
Yeah.
And for us.
Yeah.
And so you and I, since you've been here, worked together most recently on a wonderful project called The Hatchlings. And for those listeners who are not familiar with this project, I mean, it is so close to my heart that I feel like it's, you know, everybody knows what The Hatchlings are. But describe what hatchlings are and how they ended up in North Adams.
Okay, I'll try to make it not too long a story. Hatchlings are a public art installation. They're illuminated pavilions at a range of scales, so that some of them are really tiny and some of them are large enough that you could have a whole band inside. And they really are intended to spark joy. They're really a place that you could kind of like go, duck inside and experience a just sort of like the dazzling magic of being immersed in sparkling, colorful light.
I love that. And I'm glad that you said that, because the thing that I loved most about the Hatchlings was watching how kids interacted with these things.
Yeah.
And I think as adults, we're sort of conditioned as we get older to think about art as this thing that you can't touch. You have to be quiet around. If it's defined as art, you're sort of like, okay, how long do I stand in front of this thing? Like, what does it mean? Am I supposed to understand something? And yet watching kids come up to the park, jump up on the stage, start dancing, whether or not there was music to dance to, crawl inside, they understood the assignment. They knew exactly what to do without any prompting. And when the kids would take the lead, everybody else would just, you could just see groups of people just moving closer to each of these sculptures. And it was so beautiful. And I'm wondering, you know, as I was sort of seeing the space activated over the summer, I wondered, in your process, are you thinking about kind of the materials that you want to work with or the object that you want to create? Or are you thinking about the environment and the conditions that you want to create? It seems like sort of a chicken and egg kind of thing. And I'm curious to know which one of those informed your process of developing these.
Yeah. You know, so for me, coming with a background in both art and architecture, I think about sight kind of first and foremost. And I also think about, you know, really the way that I work is more as a designer, I think, than as an artist. I think that, you know, as an artist, you, like, there are specific materials that are expressing what you're needing to express. And for me, it's really more like I approach it, I mean, in architecture school, we say problematize. That's like a real
That's a very word, architecture school
very
kind of word.
Architectural word. But, like, really looking at, like, what are you solving for? So that's where I start. I look at sight and context, and then I look at, like, what is the problem you're trying to solve? And, you know, they were originally created for a park in Boston. I was invited by the Greenway to create an installation or to create a proposal for an installation. And so I started looking at, like, what is really needed here? Like, what is the thing that we're trying to solve? You know, when we started looking at trees and our relationship to trees, sort of like the presence of the park as being this site, and what is that? What is the importance of that site within the city of Boston as the kind of like lungs of the city? And it got really heady and really, you know, so beautiful and so elegant, but actually, like you said, like not that accessible. Mm-hmm. And I kind of backed up and went, all right, what do we really need as a community? And really what I was looking to create was something that felt communal, that brought people together, that felt joyful, that didn't have like a complicated story, but was really like a one-liner that you could understand immediately and share what it was about immediately, and really just felt like it was inviting. And I just wanted to create something where people from kind of like all sectors of Boston could just feel like they wanted to coexist around this thing and in this thing, and that they knew what to do with it. And it was just for them. And so when we created the proposal, we also wanted it to be like part of the Boston story.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to back up a little bit, because I started looking at like, how would you create something that people could immerse into that is really like achievable from a budget perspective? You know, how do you create something that's a public structure? So it has to be really durable, has to be, you know, you could safe to climb on, but big enough that you can go inside, has to be self-supporting, can't have some external supporting structure where you're rigging it to something else. It has to be like a shape that would do that. And so I started playing around with shapes and really like designing what would be the ideal kind of shape that would do that. And I looked at my drawings and I'm like, oh, it's the hat shell. Of course, that's what the hat shell was doing originally when it was designed. Yeah, and that's the pavilion on the Esplanade, on the river, on the Charles River. And it was designed in the 20s and built in the 30s and has been a public performance space since then. And I looked at it and went like, oh, my God, like, that's what I want to make. I want to make mini versions of that pavilion. And I, like, started looking it up. I'm like, the hat shell, like, what a strange name. And I'm like, what if the hat shell hatched shells? And so then we...
Which instantly makes them adorable.
Yes.
You can't not learn that story and think this is the most adorable thing I've ever seen.
And beautiful. More joy.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, then we're like, and, you know, what if those hatchlings wandered off down the park like adventurous ducklings, like tying it into another Boston lore story? So that's where it started, and that's where they got their name. And since then, they've traveled and been in lots of locations, and they're still hatchlings, and you kind of can't tell why they're called hatchlings unless you hear that backstory.
And the thing is, it doesn't matter. And that's what I love about it, is that you can just, of course they're hatchlings.
Yeah.
Whatever that means, of course they are. It just makes sense, and you don't need instructions when you approach them. And I have just heard so much feedback. They were deinstalled last month.
Yeah, just a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But throughout the time that they were on the Pocket Park, they were also at the church across the street, First Congregational Church. They were at MCLA for a while, and then they wandered over to Williams
and Hotel Down Street.
So they were sort of... sparkling throughout the Northern Berkshires.
Yeah. And then Williams College, we had, six of them throughout the holiday season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
But I just heard so much incredible feedback just because they were so beautiful and sparkly and just illuminated this space that otherwise was not active in any way.
Yeah.
And it was such a joy to go there and see bands perform and student performances and just kids dance.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be remiss if I didn't mention that during that installation, which would have been April, May, they were installed.
Yeah, almost a whole year.
Yeah. The North Adams Partnership had its first intern.
Yes.
And we worked with MCLA. And Connell Mannion was an MCLA student who was a junior at the time. And he worked with this studio, Northern Berkshire Community Television, used the equipment, used the expertise, and made this extraordinary little documentary about this project about public art more broadly. And I noticed in that interview that he did with you, there's a part at the beginning where you're introducing yourself, and you said something along the lines of, you don't typically consider yourself to be an artist, even though your work appears in the public realm. And that to me felt like a little bit of a bombshell because I'm like, if anybody can consider themselves to be an artist, it's Vanessa Till Hooper. But I really wanted to ask you about that. What's behind that? Has that changed? Do you feel that way? And what kind of informs that view of
yourself? So it's so interesting. That's a great question. My dad was a painter. And so I grew up around artists, and I think it comes from really, I just have so much respect and admiration for the process of really creating something from your soul. And there's something so sacred about that I feel like I'm not there yet. But the way I work is really, I think much more like a designer in that I look at like, what does something need? What needs to be here? Like, looking at the parklet, I'm like, what needs to be here? What would be the right thing to bring together? And like, you know, the list of things that you're trying to achieve. And then I work on how to create something that solves that problem. So I think of myself as a designer who works in the realm of art.
But I want to kind of stay with that for a minute, because having worked for a contemporary art museum, I understand that position where it does feel like art is this almost elevated realm that's occupied by a few people. And often people approach art in a way that feels like, well, this is not something that I can relate to, or this is different. And what I have learned, both through my experience working at a contemporary art museum, because I think that we've kind of done this to ourselves in a way. I mean, art is really what makes us human, right? It's not just something that appears in a building that's identified as an art museum. It's music, it's, you know, TV shows, it's movies, it's all kinds of things that people make. And so my response is always like to someone who might say, well, I don't like art, or I don't get art. I say, what's your favorite show? And they'll say Grey's Anatomy or whatever. Yeah. And I'll be like, hey, guess what? You appreciate contemporary art. No backsies. Like, you're doing it. Or what's your favorite song? Or just because I think that at some point, for whatever reason, we've sort of created this perceptual barrier to access art. And that's one of the things that was so magical to me about seeing how these hatchlings just sort of found their place in the community and became what the community needed. There was no instruction for what that was going to look like. They became a stage.
Yeah.
They became a little fort for kids to play in.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that I'm really interested in. Certainly interested in your position as somebody who creates for the public realm is, you know, how do you see that? I don't even want to call it a divide. Maybe that's too severe, but that sort of perceptual barrier to access.
Yeah.
And have you encountered that in your process in developing public projects? And how do you navigate that? It's a lot of questions, but you know what I mean.
I'll sort of I'll pick at it, which is that I, you know, when I started creating installations, like coming out of Oblong and moving to the East Coast and doing things that were more like technology-enhanced installations, a lot of them tended to be corporate. You know, like I've done a three-story tall public digital canvas on the facade of the Puma building in Somerville. I've done a football-length interactive wall in Fort Lauderdale at the cruise ship terminal. I've done a lot of really big projects that felt like they were behind, either literally behind, you know, a sort of like a corporate, you know, the barrier for like employees only, or they were behind the ticket, you know, the ticket gate into the terminal, like places that not everyone could experience. And it really was like, it wasn't a great fit for me because I was so interested in that space of like, how can we create these experiences for people that are inspiring and engaging and sort of wake you up to possibility, especially for young people. You know, I wanted really the general public to be able to engage in the things that I was working on. And so I kind of shifted the focus of my design studio and started applying for these, you know, public art installations, which are way harder. And you get paid a lot less money. But, you know, the process is like really important. I think that the work is really important. And, you know, I don't know if I can really answer the question about, you know, how we experience art and that sort of the divide of art. But I know the territory that I want to be in is accessible. And it's really, you know, shifting the value into that internal personal experience, that the success or failure of it is determined by that individual who walks up and feels something and wants to step inside and wants to take their photo and wants to like – and just feels like it's theirs. And they feel more sort of awake and alive, you know, having experienced it. That's like – that's the metric of success for me.
What made you feel like that when you came to North Adams? Because you made a complicated move. That was
It was.
That was not a straight line to success for you and your family moving into an unrenovated gas station.
The first time I ever visited North Adams was to Anna Farrington's gallery.
And Anna Farrington has a gallery on – had a gallery at the time on Eagle Street.
Yeah, and that was back in, I think, 2017. And I immediately fell in love. I thought it was such a special place. And it was like this cool hybrid of like industrial and artists and people just figuring things out. And I loved the rawness of it. And I just, you know, it made me want to come back. And so I ended up doing an installation in 2018 in the space called Time Link Present. And it was all about crystals and like using your own breath to illuminate the space through projection. I don't know if you ever saw that piece.
I didn't. That was sort of before my time in North Adams.
So it was like there was three locations you could. And Pamela Hirsch, who now owns Installation Space Gallery, she helped me design the project back when we were both in Somerville, Boston. And it was this great installation where you could come into the space, you could sit down on a little mat and put on a sensor across your chest. And as you inhaled, projection would illuminate these like huge pile of white crystals. And as you exhale, it turned back to white. And if you were sitting three people on the with the three sensors, it's like three sides of this giant crystal pile. And you could, if you synchronize your breath with each other, you could illuminate the crystal all together, like turn it all colors simultaneously. So it was really a meditative space and a way to kind of like be connect with other people in a different kind of way, but very experiential, very immersive. And so that was kind of my first experience being in North Adams, was that longer term project of being here and working in Anna Farrington's gallery.
Oh my gosh. And hearing you describe that makes me so sorry that I missed that. Sounds amazing.
It was incredible. I mean, the number of people who on my team who were helping to conceptualize and pull off that project, like we really did something special.
Wow. That's so cool. So on that note, and to end our lovely conversation, how do you, having come from Los Angeles, having brought others here from other places, how do you describe North Adams to someone who might be visiting or who has never been here?
I think the first thing that came to mind was, she's a salty bitch. She's not gonna, you know, turn over and become something new all of a sudden, but she is resilient and just, she's, it's like North Adams is all of the things we're struggling with on a national level in a place where we're actively working it out in a positive way. And I think that's one of the things that really keeps me here, that really feels right being here, is that it's like, it's a really special place where it's like North Adams has experienced so much loss, so many disappointments, and so many, you know, like the hospital closing or recently the YMCA closing and your favorite restaurants closing, and so much loss. And at the same time, so determined to just like really keep going. And I think that I just love that energy where it's like there feels like there's a lot of new perspective coming into North Adams, but it's not changing what North Adams has been. And I think that that's like really exciting to me, that it's like, you know, what I'm seeing is a lot of new businesses coming into North Adams and a lot of like new energy in downtown, but it's not just like turning over quickly. It's not just becoming something else. It's not becoming gentrified. It's staying, it's sort of like a little raw.
In the community, it's funny because North Adams Partnership's second intern, Andy, kind of said it this way. The community vets the change in a really interesting way. And his observation I thought was interesting because he said it's almost like a safeguard against gentrification.
Yeah.
There's a community here that is so strong and so supportive of the city as it is and the future of the city that's responsible, that if that community doesn't welcome or feel like it's a good fit, it's just not going to stick.
No, it won't stick.
And I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
And we are going to edit none of this in post because the new tagline for North Adams, you heard it here, folks, she's a salty bitch. Thank you so much for being here. I loved every second of this conversation.
Thanks,
and
Jenny.
Let's do it again. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe at northadamspartnership.org, share it with a friend, and join us next time as we continue telling the stories of community, creativity, and resilience in North Adams.